Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. This is the first episode, or I guess, really, I guess it's the second episode, isn't it? Because you got to hear me crap on for a few minutes in the first one to give you a bit of context about what this whole thing's about, and you're probably none the wiser. So this is probably the first episode that includes something of substance. But I guess even that's debatable once you listen to this episode. Just to give you a bit of background with this one, this was done a couple of months ago now with my very good friend Andrew Craig. This whole thing was going to be up a lot sooner, but due to a lot of reasons, but more or less procrastination, this did not happen then. So it's up now. Have a listen. Andrew, I've known for about 10 years, previously has played in a number of bands, including Nether Theorem, Catabasis, and currently in Rise of Avernus, and has been doing a number of fill-in session drumming for a number of other bands, which he'll touch on in his little, I guess, interview. But it's not really an interview, it's more discussion than anything else. I'll put all of the links and references that we make throughout the interview in the show notes. If I miss anything, just let me know. And if you have any questions for Andrew, find him on Facebook via his page, or if you just search for him, he's probably got a million mutual friends to me, so he won't be hard to track down. A few disclaimers for this one. It is long. It's about an hour and a half long. Reason for that is that we had a number of beers and just kept chatting and chatting. Whenever Andrew and I sort of get into a bit of a discussion, it tends to just keep going and going and going. Even yesterday, I was on the phone to him for an hour and a half, and I think he tried to call me just for a five-minute conversation, but of course, you know, you go off on a tangent. No complaints from my end. I actually enjoyed listening back to it, and it was a lot of fun. The other disclaimer that just probably needs to be raised is that we have had a few beers, as mentioned before, and the quality of discussion or even my attention to detail tends to start at a certain point and slowly go downhill from there, including at one point I'm starting to slur towards the end of it and forgetting what I've asked previously. So I've left it pretty much unedited in the sense that, you know, it is what it is. But hopefully you'll get a laugh out of it. There's some good stuff in there, some general chit chat and some useless discussion as well. So as I said in the first little episode I put together, if you like people just crapping on and rambling, then you'll enjoy this one. So that's about it. As I said, all links and everything to Andrew's stuff will be in the show notes. I'll have a page set up hopefully by the time this airs, which will link directly to all of his projects and whatnot and how to get in contact with him. Please make sure you let him know that you've listened to it and hopefully you like what he's up to as well. A good thing about this is that, you know, while it is selfish intentions for me to put something out there and another platform of media, it's good to also help friends out and do a bit of promoting on their behalf as well. So anyway, have a listen. Let me know what you think. No, I'm not going to shorten these things up, so don't bother telling me it's too long. Pretty much each time I have these episodes, I'll just go with how I feel, and if it ends up being 2-3 hours long, then so be it. If it ends up being 5 minutes long, then that's all I've got to say. So anyway, enjoy and speak soon. Andrew, tell us about our evening.
We're currently on the Central Coast, enjoying a few Monday night beverages. Just had an awesome steak cooked by ourselves at Terrible Hotel.
Or just you.
Andrew Darling does not know how to cook a steak, unfortunately. He spends too much time on his hair. So, yeah, we had that and a nice beverage, and now we're recording vocals for radio podcast thingy.
Thingy, yeah, you don't even know what it is.
I have no idea. You tell me, what is this?
We're doing? I'm still trying to work it out. I haven't even done the intro episode of what this podcast is to try and explain to people. So by the time they listen to this, in theory, they should already know what it is.
Well, you should hopefully know what it is.
Well, I don't know what it is now, but when people listen to it, they'll understand and they'll know exactly what it is. So there'll be one up on me right now, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So
it makes sense in my head after
five or six years. They'll have a better idea when they're listening to it because it will be presented to them than you have of it right now.
Yeah, because I'm going to give them the disclaimer before they actually listen to us talking right now.
And they probably won't have their fifth beer in their hand either.
No, absolutely not.
Actually, no, they probably will.
Well, depending on the person, they may need the beer.
Many of the people we know.
All right, so what this is all about is really for me to talk shit for however long until we get over it.
Over it.
Oh, okay. Bye. And I don't know, understand a bit more about what you do, band, things that you do outside of the band. And I guess the funny thing about probably us and probably a lot of other people is that we probably don't talk about a lot of the stuff outside of band things. So, yeah, because, you know, we don't catch up for coffee like girls do.
I do like my coffee, but usually because to wake me up because I'm either hungover or extremely tired. So there's not a lot of talking involved.
That's it. You don't ask about how your day's been. You usually just talk about whatever else. So usually shit. So
or the night before.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So I thought, for me, in the back of my head, while I've been thinking about this little podcasting thingy, is that I'd find out, or you can tell me about what you currently do now, and then I'll delve into your past to understand how you got to where you are now without being Dr. Phil.
just Oprah it the whole time.
Just start crying within 10 minutes.
But is there a prize under my seat?
Oh, well, yeah, no, nothing under your seat unless you can feel it.
I don't know what that's meant to mean.
But the stuff outside of the band, and I guess the way that you have to balance everything in life to make the music side of things happen, and you're pretty much flat out nonstop all the time during the week, and I'm surprised we've been able to actually have a night to catch up.
That's why it's Monday night.
That's why it's a Monday night and we're drinking beer, and I've had to come up to the Central Coast to make this happen because, yeah, we're both, especially Andrew's, pretty flat out. So, yeah, so maybe just let us, I don't know who us is, but maybe let me know who you, what you do and what you do now, and I guess both musically and otherwise, and we'll go from there.
Cool. Well, yeah, as you said, my name's Andrew Craig. I live on the Central Coast of New South Wales. I currently play in three different bands as a drummer, and then I also work as a promotions company called Cryptorian Entertainment. Do a lot of gig bookings and bookings for bands. And also, I'm a primary school teacher as well. So lots on.
That's the interesting part. Not the band. Don't worry about the band. Who cares about the band?
That doesn't matter.
No, I've known you for...
We worked out tonight. I think we hit our 10th year last year or this year.
Or no, this next year. No,
2005.
Yeah, end of 2005. So it'll be 10 years at the end of this year. I mean, we've known each other through music and you playing in bands and me playing in bands and whatnot. And
love of Europe trips.
Yeah, and love of Europe. And I think that's how we first met. I think we met at the Cambridge, didn't
Cambridge
we?
And Newcastle.
I think we met beforehand at... was it the first one?
Yeah, Cambridge and Newcastle.
Maybe that was... The night before Metalstock, I think, potentially.
I was watching a bunch of bands that probably aren't around or don't exist anymore.
Pathogen.
And Inane Eminence.
Yep.
I know they were on that.
Yep.
And yeah, catching a bunch of bands, and we'll both happen, funny enough, both happen to be at the bar at the same time.
There you go. And that's where romance started, right there at the bar.
And we missed about three bands because we got talking for that long.
Yeah, I don't remember anything really, to be honest. I remember, and I think Rob was there as well, and we were, I think we just had a good chat, and you were talking about your trip because I think you just come back from Europe and the US at that time.
Yeah, it would have been just back from 2 or 3 months in Europe.
Did you go to the US at the time as well? Did you go see Dreamfield, or was that later on afterwards?
I was in the US the year before. I worked at an American summer camp over there for 3 months, which, funny enough,
tell us about that.
Well, first year out of high school, I'm working a shitty retail job and, just needed to do something different. So I went and worked at one of the American summer camps for the summer. And, it was actually pretty awesome. But funny enough, that wasn't the main reason I went. Back then, one of my favorite bands of all time was a band called Dream Theater. And they were touring at the time for their album Train of Thought. Yeah. And I decided, well, you know what? I really have to catch these guys because at the time there was lots of doubt they will ever come to Australia, which of course now they have quite a few times. But back then, never been, no signs that they were coming. So I decided, well, I'm going to go catch them over there. And they were touring, funny enough, with Yes at the time as main support for Yes. And they were doing a bunch of random venues, places like county fairs and things like that. And I went and caught them at a place called Allentown in Philadelphia. Pennsylvania. Yep. Philadelphia's capital. And it was one of the most hick places I've ever been.
Do they have like fates and like merry-go-rounds and like the whole, like, was it like a fate?
It was nothing like that.
Oh.
These were the most hideous people on earth. Like, they had boils on boils. They had, the worst was you'd see these Pluto Pops and things like that that you get here.
Yeah.
These ones, like, the Pluto Pop came out about diameter of maybe 30 centimeters of batter. And these people had, you know, skin like looked like it was decaying and falling off their face. It was like the end of our Raiders of the Lost Ark when it starts falling off the bone. It was fucking horrible. And then the obesity level, I'm pretty sure would have been the skinniest dude there. It was crazy.
I'm sure I know a few people from Allentown in Pennsylvania, actually, and they'll probably be listening to this eventually.
So you probably should only cast this in Australia.
But what do you call them? Yeah, it's the type of shows that they do in the US. They're these sort of...
Oh, the county fairs.
County fairs, yeah. Because when I think county fair, I would think of like a... Well, for us, it's a cool fate show here. Yeah.
You wouldn't see like a band like Dream Theater or Opeth playing it.
But do they have other stuff happening there when they call it a county fair?
Exactly, pretty much like what the Easter show is with all the animals and all the food.
Like a sideshow alley.
Definitely. It's massive. Okay, right. But then at the end of the day, rather than, you know, fucking wood chopping, or some rally cars, they've got some killer bands playing.
They used to do that. I'm pretty sure Jimmy Barnes did that the Easter show in like the late 80s. I think it was a Freytrain hard album.
That would have made it worthwhile going. But then again, the Easter bags were good then as well.
Yeah, but we probably would have had our own equivalent of a Bogan sort of turnout for that anyway. So, but I'm pretty sure it was a Jimmy Barnes video clip where he's playing the Easter show. So it probably would have been a similar sort of thing. But I've seen heaps of, especially like the nostalgia bands from like the 80s and whatever, doing the county fair tours. It's really odd, like all through the Midwest and
all those kind of
and
things.
Whatever. So
I guess like because they're the big events there as well. So it's like good to tie the two together.
I guess it'd be equivalent of playing the RSL circuit or the Leith Club circuit in Australia. Like it's the type of crowd that are not up to date with modern music. They're only listening to whatever was 20 years ago. So, and because they've all got kids and families, they're at these events. So then, here's Tesla playing. Yeah, man, awesome.
Which is good. I mean, good way to get the family into it.
Is it Tesla or Telsa? Tesla. Telsa?
Tesla.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I call him Fifth Beer Andrew Dowling.
That's all right. There's more coming.
But yeah, so yeah, I was over in America for that. And worked at the summer camp, tied it all in together and worked there for 3 months. And
what do you do at summer camp, though?
Summer camp, I mean, it's pretty much exactly like the movies without the gratuitous sex scenes. Because, you know, you don't want to end up in an American jail for the rest of your life.
There's no topless, like, other... staff members or anything like that?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. All right.
There was a lot of that on there because every week there'd be a different group of kids coming. It wasn't one of those summer camps where they're there the whole summer. Okay. So every week you'd get a different group of kids and then you'd have a day and a half off. So it got pretty crazy on those times. But it was a great time. Like, but at the same time, I just turned 18 and going to summer camp, just hit this peak in my life. Life's awesome in Australia.
You can't drink.
And then get over to America. Oh, wait, you just
hit the 21.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, now 21. That's going to suck.
So I had to
that's going to suck.
It was different. And then...
Were you drinking though? Or did you get anyone smuggling?
But it was pretty hard because I was pretty serious about it. But I remember, I think it was, there's this pub down the road, like 10 minutes down the road that they all went to on the weekend. And we went there a lot, but they were pretty strict on ID and everything. So they're happy. We were allowed to hang there. Like, if you're over 18, you can hang at the pubs, but you can't drink. But on the last night, the summer camp, when we're all like, you know, last night, everyone's going home. And there was people from like everywhere, like New Zealand, Australia, obviously America, Canada, South Africa, Europe, obviously, even like some, there's one person from Middle East. Like, it was really diverse crowd.
Captain Planet.
Exactly. Yeah. But so like that last night they just didn't care about carding, and it was like, you can imagine that half of the camp,
all that tension staff, being released,
and on top of that half of them haven't had a big night of drinking in 3 months.
Wow.
So that got intense. The next morning just like walking through the camp, seeing people pass out everywhere, vomit piles everywhere,
and all the kids had left by then, obviously.
After the kids are gone. But funny enough, that's still what made me decide, you know, one day I should do primary school teaching. And nothing has changed.
Oh, man. So, so I guess because we went off on a bit of a tangent, but you went to the US that year before, so 05?
So it was in the US 04.
04.
And so the first time I went to Europe was 2005.
Okay, all right. And then, yeah, we would have met early 2006 because I moved to Sydney in January 06.
Would have met, because you'd only just moved. Do you remember that?
And then obviously you've played in a million bands
over the years,
whether it be permanent or fill-in.
Yep, quite a few. Yeah,
such as.
Okay.
Rattle them all off from day dot to now.
Not including any tribute or one-offs or cover bands like that Sentence gig that time. Okay, first band was a band called Never Theorem back in, that started either 2005, 2006, roughly. And that was an instrumental, post-rocky metal kind of band with drums, bass, guitar and violin. Eventually incorporated vocals, but that was only sort of towards the latter half of the band's reign. Reign. 3 years isn't a reign.
Yeah, you play a fair bit, though.
Back in the day, yeah, played quite a bit with that one. Yeah. But then it wasn't long after that. That's when I started whoring myself out for bands. And within a year after that, I was in playing three bands, which were all full-time. That was Hermina, progressive metal band from Sydney, Lycanthia, which was a long-running doom metal band, and both those two bands are still going, and a band called Catabasis, which that was... we did 32 dates over 3 months in one tour. All Australian dates, mind you. So, you know, trying to even think of 32 different places to play is hard enough. But yeah, it was good fun. So that's out of those three bands. And then have I played in since? I'm sure I'm missing some of them. I joined Newcastle band called Requiem of the Damned.
Are you still in that band?
Yep, still play that.
Oh, really?
Pretty quiet.
They don't do anything.
No, recorded drums for an EP back early last year. So apparently, I think that's actually getting finished at the moment. So hopefully when that's done, you know, be a bit more active. But my main band, which I've been going with for about 3.5 years now, it's called Rise of Avernus. And we've been going, started in 2011, I think, roughly. And yeah, we just released a new EP as of today, actually. Got released digitally around the world today.
Is it today?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, there we go.
Because I bought it on Friday night.
What did you buy a copy?
If I really did.
I was going to give you one, but not now.
Oh, jeez, I just wasted $15. No.
Wasted,
yeah, that's right. No, I got one off Mez, so I got that and the Chaos Divine album as well.
Nice, that's a good album.
Yeah, so that's cool. So
yeah, so released digitally worldwide today through our label Oral Music. Oh, no.
Andrew just spilled a beer, or was it close to spilling a beer?
Not spilled. It was the head was going high. You did that 2 seconds.
Yeah, no, I can't. Yeah.
Currently having some nice German beers, and they.
Yeah, we're drinking.
Yeah, try and say that one.
Weifenstaffer.
Purists are going to hate us.
Yeah, probably. It's great though.
That's a good bit. Good drop.
At least we're not drinking new.
Well, 4X.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I think that's not the kind of clientele you want listening to your podcast.
No, they probably are though. I don't know. Depends on which direction this podcast goes.
With the next couple tour dates you have up in
Kalgoorlie and Perth.
Cairns.
Cairns, Townsville. Sorry, guys, if anyone's listening from there.
The silence.
Tumbleweed. Yeah, thanks, mate.
I've written little comments to Andy on place cards anytime I feel he's not awesome. I'll just hold them up. That's why he might laugh
last
randomly.
One said fag. So there you go.
I'll draw the little Facebook thumbs up.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It'd be like, good job.
Yeah, nice one. Good question, Andy.
I guess probably a big thing I'm curious about is that, yeah, thanks for the thumbs up, is, you know, you're doing fill-in stuff for another band at the moment as well, as Rise, and?
Yeah, playing full-time now for a band called Bastardizer, also a Sydney band. So we've got, depends when this airs, we've got a tour coming up with a band from USA called Midnight, which is the end of April. So if you're listening to this and that's already been and you missed out, well, it's like a Back to the Future thing, isn't it?
Hang on, when are you going?
End of April.
Yeah, I'd hope that something would be out by now, but I could be, yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna stockpile interviews, I think, to to begin with. Yeah. So yeah, you might. So yeah, I don't know.
Got that. And yeah, we're doing a Southeast Asia tour in September, which will be really cool, and a few other dates here and there that are yet to be announced. So yeah, it's cool. Over three bands, like, I mean, as I said, like, obviously Requiem isn't really active at the moment, but potential to be once the EP's out. But over Rise of Vernus, we've got at least 20 to 25 dates lined up at the moment, and that's just the start of it, because we're, now that the EP's out, we're really getting on board and getting out there again. And then yeah, Bastardize, the same kind of thing, and I know they're looking at doing a second album towards the end of the year or early next year, so I guess it'd be the same thing.
Yeah,
once that's out, getting busy. So yeah, a lot to be doing. And then I also yeah, on top of that, yeah, you just gave me a signal to talk about the busyness of I'm also do lights for a lot of bands, and also now permanent lighting guy for a band called Sleep Makes Waves from Sydney, and that have been doing really, really well, currently in Europe touring.
Some small band from Sydney.
It's ARIA nominated and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, they've been doing great. So I'll be at all their Australian shows in May and June doing lights for them, as well as a band, international band called They Will or They Must Destroy Everything. Another post band, yeah.
Sure,
I apologise for people that know them. I've only heard the name once or twice, but I hear they're really good. So I'll be out on the road doing that. So, yeah.
When's that?
Throughout every weekend of May and early June.
Okay.
So pretty much from start of May through to October at this stage, every weekend I'm in a different city doing something.
I feel like my claim to fame will be one day that Sleep Makes Waves opened up for us at Utopia.
Funny enough, my old band was on that gig. Remember? Never Theorem played that one too.
That's right, yeah. That was the double header. We did, actually, that was a three show weekend where we did that. We played Wyong, Grand Hotel, and maybe it was over a couple of weekends.
Yeah,
but and
yeah,
and they played Newcastle, we played the Lofts as well. But that's yeah, right. it was a similar sort of thing, yeah, over a couple of weekends.
Yeah.
But,
that was when
we
were touring their first album, wasn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh, I don't think it was either their first album, I think it was their EP or whatever.
Nice.
And I think the only reason we got that was Tom, the guitarist at the time, was a fan of ours, and I
just wanted to combine forces.
Yeah, I think we're trying to do a bit of cross section, trying cross fans over and whatever.
It's a good idea.
I think Kid liked us as well, and
I think that's one thing when it comes to the music scene, especially in Australia, that crossover is the best thing. Like sticking to the one style and only having that single style builds.
Unless we did a tour with like Disentombed or something like that, like, or yeah,
something completely mismatched.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think as long as there's that base element that bands or fans can appreciate, then they'll enjoy it no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, we tried a few years ago. We tried back in 2009, 2010 when we really set in stone. We had a couple of, well, one song in particular had a pop sort of poppy sort of song that we wrote, tried to sell it out a little bit, not intentionally, but we had a song there that we wrote and recorded and thought that we could do a tour on and play with a lot of hard rock bands and whatever, and yeah, it sort of worked, it sort of didn't.
What song was that?
100 Reasons.
Okay.
And we did a video clip for it, and but we did a bunch of shows with Lust, and
oh, that's right, I do.
And we played Oxford, the Art Factory in Oxford Street.
Tried a few different venues, like
It sort of it worked a little bit, but then we sort of found that the people that we were trying to win over were people that were already niche audience. There were people that were that loved glam rock and sleaze rock and whatever.
So couldn't really pull them in.
There were people that already knew music. They weren't people that weren't like they knew of melodic metal, they knew of power metal, but they'd already chosen niche cock rock metal. Which
I guess that is the thing generally with metal, like most of the people know what styles they like by the time they're going to local gigs. Like
and
if you're playing like a support on an international bill, you've got more chance.
Different story.
They're the kind of people that like you. I mean,
you got your weekend warriors.
You get the people that only go to those because that's all they know. That's all they've been exposed to. So that's the best chance to obviously show what you've got to those kind of people. But obviously, yeah, for local gigs, most people know what they want, and because there's so much happening every weekend, you've got a great selection of gigs to choose from. They're only going to go the ones that they know and like
that's it. Yeah, it's sort of it was a good little test at the time, and we still try and do a little thing little things every once in a while, but for now, we've gone back to just what we know and keep to the formula and go from there, which we've had a lot more success with. But you've got the lighting thing happening with Sleep Makes Waves, you know, a lot of touring around that. I mean, they're obviously getting quite active.
Yeah, so they're doing massive Euro tour at the moment, and then an Asian tour, and then they come back and straight into Australia.
Are you doing everything?
Pardon?
Are you going to do everything?
I'm doing all the Australian, but not the Asian. Not the European. At the moment, you know, they're still like only Asian, you in those kind of markets.
Until you like prove yourself as the master technician of lights, and then,
and
they become like the biggest band in the world, and
I think in the current climate, it's hard enough to take your own sound guy, let alone anything else.
Very true. That might just mean that they miss you even more because they're probably just dealing with some dropkick German trying to do their lights in Europe. So
I like how you say dropkick German when we're having German beer.
Oh. That's all right. I love the German beer.
I love the German people.
Yeah, I do too.
I like the German women.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really...
They're not as good as the Scandinavian.
Yeah, I don't know. I've met
a lot of nice German women.
Oh, yeah? To tell. Where do we go from here?
Yeah. I know. I've been to Europe how many times now? 4 times, and predominantly through the summer because obviously... That's when the best metal festival's on, so I often like to go to catch the festivals and catch up with mates, and they're always the best times. And the majority of the festivals are in Germany, or like they have the most of them anyway, like obviously Bakken, Summer Breeze, Party Sand, all those ones. When you're out camping with a bunch of people, like-minded people for 5 days, and you're always drinking, you never know what might happen. But it should be said that the first night of a festival is always the best night because people don't shower for 4 days.
Well, I was just going to say that I'm sure the hygiene issue would be something to consider later on in the festival. Yeah, if it's a multiple-day festival, I'd be a little bit weary.
Wet wipes do become your best friend.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, you know, in the end, if you enjoy yourself, it's, you know, I haven't got really much more to say than that, so...
In the infamous words of the great Linkin Park, in the end, it doesn't even matter.
So prolific. Oh, that's amazing.
That's one of the greatest bands of our
time. What a prophet. Oh, what a prophet.
Those guys, yeah. They'll be etched in stone across the times.
Oh, man. All right, so you got the lightning thing happening.
Lightning.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, God of Thunder.
So you got that happening. You've got Rise of Venus. You're doing the Bastardizer thing at the moment. From a musical point of view, that's pretty heavy. It's pretty intensive.
Definitely, yeah. Like, pretty much, like as you said before, Monday, the only time we could do this interview podcast is Monday night because it's probably the only night of the week I know I'm definitely free.
Yep. However, you also have a day job.
I do.
And it's teaching school children.
It is.
So you obviously do primary school teaching.
I do.
Do you want to just delve into that a little bit?
Back in 2009, I think it would have been. Just decided, you know, I was sick of working retail. I'd worked, I did a course in communication and media at TAFE for a year, and then as a result, that got me a job working, funny enough, at Centrelink out of all jobs, working there for a year, and decided it was the most miserable experience of my life. So after that, I decided I can't do shitty things like this anymore. I'm off to go to do uni. So decided I want to do primary school teaching based off when I worked at summer camp. I decided, you know what, probably never going to have kids. I'm happy with that. So I can be around them during the day. So then I decided I'll do the course. That was a 4-year course and finish, and now I'm working as a teacher. So I'm not working full-time because, I mean, full-time teaching is pretty intense and very full-on. It'd be really hard to manage even one band, let alone 3 a month, if you were doing full-time teaching. So at the moment I work as a casual, but I only work on one school here on the Central Coast, and I pretty much work 4 to 5 days a week. So I do work full-time hours majority of the time. But the good thing is school holidays gives me free rein to do whatever I need to do, which works really well. And I love teaching. Like, it's one of my, every day. It's the first time I've ever had a job in my life out of 15 years of working that I've woken up, and every time I wake up, I'm not miserable to go to work. I actually enjoy what I do.
So it's better than working at Clark Rubber.
Yes. That wasn't too bad most of the time, but it was more the jobs like Centrelink and Big W that were the...
You're getting something out of it, though.
Exactly.
There's a bit of satisfaction out of the job.
Yeah, definitely. I've been lucky enough even to be get blocks on teaching music, which is awesome fun because it's just like a percussive mayhem for an hour with every class. I just give every kid free rein on like the... like congas and djembes and triangles and tambourines.
Definitely helps when you're a drummer.
Yeah, and the kindergarten rooms are right next to the music room, so they find it hard to get their kids focused when all you can hear is 30 kids in the room next door hitting percussive instruments.
And I always see pictures float up on... Actually, I haven't seen too many lately, but I see pictures float up on Instagram and whatever of... or even Facebook, of the numerous adventures you have at primary school of what's the giraffe? The giraffe on the
Healthy Harold.
Healthy Harold, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What a champ.
Yeah, but dressing up for whatever and
yeah, getting selfies with Healthy Harold and Book Week, dressing up with a bunch of other mates as Ninja Turtles. And, yeah, it's great. I mean, in my natural element.
So how many people... that you work with, not the kids, but how many people that you work with know that you play in bands and do what you do? And to what degree do they know?
They all know I play in bands. I was actually not long after starting there, so it would have been about end of 2013, was playing a local show, and a lot of them actually came out to see us. They were a little shocked with the kind of style. Like they, you know, I told them, you know, it's a heavier style and like, you know, you mightn't be able to understand
really
the vocals
softened
at
it
times.
To try and get it across.
It's a little bit of a mix of like a heavier Bon Jovi with, you know, a bit of Alice Cooper. You'll love it. It's all right.
How disappointed would they have been?
Also, the venue was abnormally loud, so
I guess it wouldn't have helped either.
But they all know to do that kind of stuff. Funny enough, a lot of the kids last year, especially, a lot of them, it was one of those like they felt really advanced, like you would have thought they were already in high school, the year sixes, and they were like active on things like Instagram, Facebook, and that, and they're always doing Google searches on all their teachers, so they found out easily about the band and, you know, listen to the music and all that stuff.
That's a weird thing because, like, when I was a kid, you didn't know anything about your teachers and you didn't have social media or anything like that. You, if anything, you'd try and find, like, someone's name in the white pages and prank call them. And even then, you'd, like, find out their address from the white pages and you'd think you'd, like, been, like, private eye investigated to try and work that out. And then you'd egg their house or whatever. But
then find out there's another, like, A. Sternum in the same street.
There's like five of them. It's like, oh well, I just egg all five. But it's different now. Like I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine me being a kid and being able to find my teachers like Instagram, Facebook, fucking YouTube, SoundCloud, whatever, and then realizing that they play in a band as well. It just crazy.
As a result, I've had to make all those accounts private now because I always had Facebook, I guess, kind of private because I know how Facebook works. But like a lot of the other ones, like Instagram, only funny enough, got, I think, late last year for the first time. No idea, you know, at first as with a lot of those things, how it actually works. I found out that a bunch of students were following me and I didn't even know. And like got to school one week and like, oh, you're out with this teacher, you know, having a beer. I'm like, how the hell would you know that?
So do you like now that you've made the profiles private and you can see the requests coming through, do you screen them as far as like if you can see like it's someone from school, a kid?
Oh, definitely.
Just ignore it or leave it sit there.
Ignore it or decline straight away. Luckily, I mean, this year, as I said, last year's year at the school I work at just seemed really advanced. They were all really active on that kind of social media. But, yeah, so now it's just good to have everything private. But not just that too. I mean, it's probably good for everyone to have their social media private. I think it's honestly gets to the stage where, like, you'll see people you don't even know or you've only met once and they know everything about you.
I added some dude. Well, I didn't add him. I accepted this guy's friend request. Some dude from Wollongong I'd never even met before. And he posted a picture today of him with a... I didn't even know what it was, a beer or cider or whatever. And I can't remember. I just fucking unfollowed him so quickly. It was like, I think the beer or the cider was called Naked Something. So he had like his pants off and he had the beer or the drink, the stubby in front of his dick, and he was just completely naked. And I just went, I just literally added you yesterday. Like, I accepted your friend request yesterday. And
that's the first post you've seen of him.
And this is the first post I've seen. And I sort of looked through his photos and went, eh, all right, we'll see how long this lasts. And then here's his photo. And I'm, and you know, obviously the guy thinks he's a comedian, but I just sort of went, yeah, I don't really want to see this in my newsfeed. I'll see you later. Yeah, fag, absolutely. Yeah, there you go. There's the card. So, all right, so I guess the next question from that is obviously the people that you work with are aware of what you do. And the kids, to a degree, some of them know.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them know. I play in a band, but, like, I don't ever.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them are always
so asking. So you don't hand out promo CDs to the guys, and the kids in the class or anything?
Yeah, here you go. Have a three-track sampler.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Here's some, listen to some dark symphonic.
That's what I think, too. Like, I mean, imagine if you were a kid hearing some of that kind of music. I remember when I was a kid, I think it was the soundtrack to the movie Ghost. And it would have the song that everyone knows. And then after that, there was like a song from the movie that was really like dark. And like, I remember as a kid, like every time parents would be up drinking and that, and they'd listen to that soundtrack because they'd want to hear that song. Then because like back in the day, it was only you paid CD, you didn't have MP3. Yeah. It'd always come after it and I'd always get scared and go hide somewhere when that song came on. I can only imagine kids like not, because I mean, they're like, I can't even remember.
Well, you never heard a sound like that. You never heard.
Exactly. Like, how many kids would have heard, like, unless their parents are into it, music with anyone, like, even just singing growling or any of that kind of stuff, or even the really, really high pitched, like, for something like Lord or something like that? It's just.
Oh, yeah. You know, like. Timid, scared kids. Yeah. That's true. Why? I'm not editing that, by the way. Sorry, Tim. But, oh, yeah. Look, I mean, I remember when I was sort of growing up, adolescent or whatever, and just sort of listening to music, and obviously there was a lot of pop music because that's all that was played on the radio. And my, I didn't have any older brothers or sisters, so all I had was just, you know, whatever the people at school were listening to, and so I sort of went from there. But
well, on that note, what was the first thing, like at what age and would you have considered the first heavy rock / metal kind of song that got you into that kind of style?
Well, the earliest thing that I can think of is probably my parents bought a Best of the Best 92 cassette. So I would have been in year three and I think it was Mr. Big. I don't know. Well, Mr. Big was on there and, I think Diesel and I was like Whitney Houston and a bunch of other artists on there. But I think Julian Lennon, but yeah, Mr. Big one was the one that stuck in my head. I mean, it wasn't hard rock or anything like that. I mean, had U2, Mysterious Ways and whatever. I mean, 92 was pretty good for music, but Mr. Big was cool. It was, you know, obviously it was the ballad song and everyone knows it's the most popular song, but I still remember driving around the car. I mean, I would have been, so 92 would have been grade three, year three, which would have been seven or eight. Yeah, it was, you know, that I was just singing in the car with my parents and whatever. But and it was like Tom Cochrane or whatever, Life is a Highway and all that. Nice. So that was probably the earliest exposures of rock that I had, and then sort of went from there. But
I think mine would have been, well, sort of went like early primary school was, you know, just, you know, whatever, got force-fed, like, yeah. Back then, there used to be those Hit Machine CDs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't know if they're around anymore, but, like, you know, they'd have all the latest hits of the last, week.
And I remember, like summer hits or.
Oh.
No, it was Hit Machine. It was actually Hit Machine.
Well, funny enough, my first CD I ever got was Hit Machine 14. And the only reason I remember, I got it for my birthday, I think it would have been year four. And the only reason I want it because it had both versions of the Macarena on it. I was like, I was stoked to get it. But then I remember.
That's bad.
Yeah, oh, it's terrible. And then I had one mate that only lived down the road, year five, year six, and he had an older brother, and his older brother was into bands like Pantera and Metallica and Offspring and all that kind of stuff. So I heard that a bit, and then I remember one of my best mates one day, and he never had an older brother or anything. It's just out of the blue. I don't know if he just back then, HMV records. just decided to buy a bunch of CDs. But we're in year six. Funny enough, in year six at the school that I now teach at, I still remember the exact classroom. We brought it in and we'll listen to it. He had Sepultura Chaos CD. He had Korn, Life is Peachy, and he had Tool. I can't remember which Tool album he had, one of the early ones. And so we got to do this assignment where we had to put together something and we were in the store and just listening to those CDs. We never put together the assignment. We got in heaps of trouble because we never did anything. We just listened to the music. And that's where it started. And then I remember not long after that, back in those days, CD shops had the listening stations.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
that. You'd go
that.
Up and
you'd
say...
Or HMV.
Yeah, and you had like the six CDs to choose from and you'd be able to listen to it. And it was only within that week I went in and they had... same album, like the Korn album and a couple others, and sat there listening to those for like 2 hours. The whole time parents were off shopping. And this is only what, I was 11 at the time. And yeah, just got addicted and just went from there.
Oh man, that was my teens in a nutshell. Just you'd get given $30 from the parents. And that would cover you $30 or $40, and it would cover you to get the train to the city. It would give you like a cheeseburger or whatever for lunch and whatever you had left over to get a CD, and then you catch a train home, and it was just like, and you would go to HMV, or in Brisbane where I was, there was an independent store called Skinny's, which is amazing. They did the first Opeth and the Haunted in stores and whatever. Amazing independent
shop. Back in 03.
Yeah, and but they had the same sort of thing. They had the CD thing on the wall, the sampler thing. You chuck the headphones on and listen to the latest albums or whatever. And that's all we do. We just go in there and just listen to whatever's new and then whatever spare change we could rack up together between however many of us came into the city and try and buy an album, and we go and burn it between us all. But you know, there's so many great albums that I bought, and just going home on the train for half an hour or whatever it was, and reading through the lyrics and the liner notes, because you only have one CD that you could afford.
You'd devour all that information.
Yeah, you had no choice, because you spent so much money on one CD, and then you go home and you sit in front of the stereo and you play it, and you couldn't afford to get distracted by another CD, another pile of CDs next to you like I do now. Like I buy 10 CDs and you just rip them onto the laptop
Listen to for 5 months or so.
Absolutely. So, you know, I remember getting Euthanasia by Megadeth, and I remember sitting in front of the stereo and listening to the song and reading the lyrics and the liner notes and just like forcing myself to like it. I mean, I enjoyed it. It wasn't something that I had to really sort of, I guess, force myself. But every CD, I forced myself to like it no matter what.
Well, if you buy it, that's the thing. Once you buy it and you've spent $30 on it, you're going to like it.
And they always say, like, some of the best albums usually take a few spins to really sort of understand and for it to click.
A good album.
And the ones that click straight away usually don't last that long either. So it's quite funny. But
it is funny like that.
Yeah, but I just... spending that much time to listen to an album front to back all the time was so cool. So
I think I still remember the last time I bought a bunch of CDs that I really got into. Would have been Metal for the Brain 2005. I remember going through the stores there, because they, like, there was a couple, you know, market little stores that people set up there that had a lot of imports. I remember picking up a few. Like, one I picked up was Orphanland, Mabul, which is still one of my favourite albums of all time. And yeah, it was just crazy, like, just getting these CDs. And I remember, because at the time, the drive back to back to the Central Coast was, you know, solid 4 or 5 hours. So I remember there was about 5 CDs I got, and just listening to each one just completely. And yeah, it's a rarity these days. Like, people's attention spans just don't seem... I mean, I still love buying CD. You've seen my CD collection in there. It's, you know, massive. And I don't get to it as much now just because, you know, bills and all that kind of stuff. But I still love the...
It's great.
I love buying CD and just having it in front of me, having all the information I need there in the liner notes. It's great.
It's good to have the real thing. And I mean, we always have that debate within the band as to how we release the new things in the future, and, you know, doing the digital thing and vinyl and blah, blah. And, you know, we sort of look at it and go, oh, what's the most viable thing? And maybe we should just stick to digital only for a particular release. And I can't handle it. I have to have at least CD, at the very least. I've got from the collectible part of me and from just that music enthusiast aspect, I have to have the tangible thing. I have to have the CD itself. It's just way too good to open up a case and read and flick through the booklet and read the liner notes and just really sort of understand
probably the way the band wants to present it ultimately.
That's it. And
that on the vinyl release, obviously, like same thing. Like
artwork, and they can put more art in there and whatnot, and a better visual representation of it. I've heard bands say this for quite a few years. It's cool to see, obviously, the lyrics side of things, but seeing the liner notes and seeing how albums are put together, and especially for young bands and trying to understand how to put an album together, and seeing the recording studio, the producers, the engineers, if they've got any, and then the thanks list in general, like just to see who they thank and whether it's particular individuals in the industry that helped them get to where they are, press and PR and whatever, or whether it's just other bands. And sometimes, especially when I first started listening to music, like a lot of the bands that I got into were purely out of the liner notes of bands, the first few bands that I liked, and then I went through them and said, oh, well, they like Anthrax, they like Megadeth, they like Nuclear Assault, blah, blah. And then I started going, well, I wonder what they sound like. And then I went from there. So I went purely from the liner notes.
I do remember that, yeah, when they say the bands we thank either because they toured with them or...
And like with a lot of the home videos, you sort of saw that as well. You sort of, you could see the bands referenced in the home videos.
Remember the old home videos?
Yeah.
They were awesome.
Yeah.
Some of those are like Pantera ones back in the day.
Oh, yeah. And they had like Skid Row referenced in there and whatever. But, you know, it's probably a bit different now and people, it's a lot more sort of...
There's not many people do that. Like, it might be a bonus feature on DVD, but it's not solely that anymore because anything people record, it's straight online.
Well, that's it. And it's probably a lot easier. I mean, I think listeners are a lot more knowledgeable than they probably were even five or 10 years ago.
I mean, it's better being able, not better necessarily, but it's good being able to do those instant updates because it keeps people interested rather than waiting, you know, a year or two between releases. Because, being able to keep that constant communication with your fans is a big thing. Yeah.
And I think it's probably like it's easier these days for people to listen to newer bands that are semi-large, but I think there's a lot of bands, especially Australian bands, that are still trying to make their way. And there's a few Australian bands that are doing really well at the moment. Neil Bouvascaris and King Parrot and Sleep Makes Waves, obviously. I mean, they're a different league altogether.
We're still the more underground spectrum still. Like,
sort of guitar-driven sort of music.
Which is good, great to see, obviously.
Yeah. But, there's a whole blanket of bands underneath that are waiting to be discovered, and we've sort of been ignored for quite a few years, and I think now we're starting to get a lot more exposure. But it definitely helps when these bands and all these other bands that are doing quite well are starting to get a bit more of a name for themselves, is that they start referencing their peers in their booklets
rather than always seeing the same international bands.
Absolutely. For sure.
I think obviously the internet and all the social media makes it more accessible for bands like that, and I find especially like when some of the bands I mean, like get reviewed and that, and they compare us to some bands, and there'll be the usual bands like the big ones, but then sometimes there'll be smaller bands like bands that we've played shows with and stuff here in Australia. I think that I love seeing that because when they compare us to bands that only live down the road and stuff like that, and ones that are doing their own thing, and that it's great to see because it just means that kind of music and Australian music in general, Australian metal, is reaching overseas. Which
absolutely,
is,
I mean, in the end, it's. I'll probably crap on about this over the next million podcasts if I make it that far. But, the more bands from our sort of circle, as far as sort of Australian heavy music, that do relatively well, the better for the rest of us. You get a little bit jealous of people's success along the way, and it's just I think it's a healthy thing because you sort of want to be competitive.
Gives you something to strive to.
Absolutely, you raise the bar and you sort of go, okay, well, they're doing really well, and I want to get to that level. I want to be able to do that more. So you raise the bar, but the more bands that do well, then the better, the higher the bar gets raised for the local scene. And I mean, from a basic level, like people from a crowd attendance, you get more people attending local shows just because there's more quality bands out there in the scene. So it's, a lot of people seem to be fixated on sort of looking after themselves, but I don't know. Oh,
that's the worst thing. Like everyone needs to sort of definitely work together. I think, in that kind of
sense. Yeah, and it's not a case that, you know, you get the brutal death metal bands that have to work with the power metal bands or whatever, you know, from those extremes, but I think people just need to be a little bit open-minded about helping each other out. And when we get opportunities where, you know, they do not suit us whatsoever, or we cannot do a date because of other commitments or whatnot. And I know for a fact that there's bands in the past that have, you know, they get those opportunities and they just go, oh, well, we can't do it. But instead, you know, we'll try and refer another band. We'll try and get another band on there instead of our place. We'll recommend one of our peers to try and do it. So it's all the networking thing. It's all building that rapport with other bands, and, you know, those bands that have worked really hard and have left a really great effect on us, we'll turn around and go, well, hey, we can't do that date, but we know a really great band that can do it. And the more bands, especially Sydney's been really tough for the last few years, the more strong Sydney bands that can pull out of this, the better the scene for everyone, the more people that are going to be out for shows. So
I've noticed it seems to be back. I mean, people are always going to complain about scene. Unfortunately, everyone has a different view on it, which is a big thing. But I've noticed, like, last couple of years, especially in the last year or even last half year, it seems to be on the incline, in my opinion anyway. There's a lot more quality bands. Like, I mean, because places like Melbourne and that always got quality bands. But I don't know, Sydney seems to have stepped up its game a bit. And
it's getting better. It is getting better.
And a lot of really good bands. Like, I mean, for every style of metal and hard rock, there seems to be at least 5 to 6 quality bands in every genre at the moment, at least.
I think minimum. I think for Sydney, what Sydney's needed is that while, you know, the venues have sort of lacked and we've suffered a lot from that, and I think that's been a bit of an excuse for a lot of bands and promoters to not really put a lot of effort in. That's why the scene sort of died its ass a bit. But I think there's been new bands that have come through now, like Trollhagen, and a lot of sort of younger bands. I would even say, Undernight's Cover, like from a young 18-year-old point of view, that would come in and start to make a bit of headway, and it's just another sort of young wave of people coming through and starting to do new shows. But it's just especially Trollhagen. I mean, you put on the shows last year, and I think
because I'm booking agent, booking agent for a band called Trollhagen and a couple other bands, and even since the release of their first album, but especially since the release of their latest album, which came out August last year, they've made massive waves. Like last year especially, they did a tour throughout Europe, 24 dates supporting Aylstorm, which just did them wonders. But since getting back and doing their own tour here in Australia, they've done Triple J especially have just found out about them, and they're just playing them almost on a regular basis, a daily basis. One of their tracks especially, Viva Loa Vegas, they've been playing that almost every day. I hear someone saying that, hey, I just heard Trollhagen on the radio today. And like, you can tell, on especially for their social media, how much more attention they're getting. They're getting more sales. It's just great because, I mean, Trollhagen are definitely not a conventional band by any stretch. They mix so many different genres and they can actually fit so many different kind of builds. They started off playing a lot of metal builds, obviously, but now they're playing with progressive rock, psychedelic. They just played with a Japanese band called Vampilia, which Vampilia are one of those bands you can't even put a genre on anyway. But they've just really going leaps and bounds. And I think Trollhagen, they're off to Europe in a couple of months to play at the Summer Breeze Festival in Germany, which is just huge. So they're just definitely one band that's just going leaps and bounds, and yeah, I think they'll really be known. A couple more releases and they're just going to be massive.
That's pretty mad. A lot of shit going on. Can I take a step back a little bit? You were talking about back in the past.
Back in the past.
You were talking about, you know, I asked the question about, you know, your colleagues and the kids that you teach and whatever, about knowing about what you do for a living. I guess it's a bit of a hard thing because I was curious to know the stereotypes that surround both industries. So being a teacher, but being a musician, in the sense of being a musician that plays heavy metal. So there's two questions. The first one is, how have you been able to balance both of them to make it work? And the second one is, what have, maybe I'll rehash this question again, because it's a bit more involved, but what aspects of your job as a teacher have you been able to use in your band situation and vice versa back? So what have you learned from being in a band and dealing with the people that you deal with and that sort of that unique social aspect to go back into teaching as well? If there's anything in particular that you've learned.
Easy. Okay, first one, how I manage it, stay single. Simple. Makes it so much easier. But I don't know. You just got to be well organised, know your schedule well in advance. I think organisation is so big. And every time I find if I get lazy and start slacking, then things fall to shit. Mm. And yeah, I just... You need to have organisation. That's a big one. And when any time that I'm organising, because I organise a lot of the gigs like under Cryptorian Entertainment as a booking agency, that does make it easier where there's a minimal chance for clashes. But every now and then there are, and unfortunately you just can't do everything. And as much as I'd love to, unless I start cloning, got to just pick and choose.
And do what you got
to
do.
Yeah. But in regards to how it applies to teaching and vice versa, I think, again, organisation, I think booking gigs, time management, rehearsals, practice, playing the shows, travel, everything comes under good organisation. I think one thing, and I've been in bands with people that have absolute shithouse organisational skills, and you can't, unfortunately, you cannot be in a band with people that can't be organised themselves. And I say that to anyone out there, either in a band or wanting to be in a band. If you're in a band with someone that's got absolute shithouse organisational skills and don't know their ass from their face, then they're not worth being in a band with, because whether it's now or a couple months or a couple years down the track, it's not going to work. Simple as that. So I'm lucky that the bands I'm playing in currently do have good organisational skills, and everyone's switched on. But another thing on that note too, like, everyone has to have a paid job. Unfortunately, in the current, the way things are, current band scene, you have to have a job. You cannot survive off, you know, casual retail job at all.
That's a hard thing. Like, there's a level of commitment between, you know, if you've got four people in a band and trying to get to a common goal. And, you know, if your band's doing fairly well and you're getting enough revenue from the band that can fund everything, and you don't have to worry about, you know, touring and what, or releasing an album or an EP or whatever, because the band can fuel it, then that's okay. But for a lot of bands, it's you can't, at least to get the momentum going in the first place, you've got to have a commitment from people in the band, and you've got to have financial commitment. And if you've got one, even just one person who hasn't got their shit together and they're relying on the fucking doll or whatever, then...
It just doesn't work, yeah, right. Definitely. But I think organisation's a big thing. Oh, the other big one, don't have any psychotic members in your band. That's, yeah, if you've got anyone that's completely psychotic, get them out of the band. Or
do you have any examples for that?
Oh. I could talk about that one for hours, but
we'll
steer clear of that one.
We'll wait for episode 600.
But yeah, generally, organisation is probably one of the biggest things I can put it down to. If everyone can hold their own, and, you know, you might only have one person in the band that just, let's say, for example, book your shows, book your flights and all that, but the people still need to, you know what's going on, keep switched on, be there on time, know what time you're hitting the stage, what time your load-in, load-outs are, all that kind of stuff. You just need people that know that stuff. Once you got that, then it makes everything. I mean, obviously, you still need some people that can write good music. You need bandmates that can write music.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the unimportant side of things.
Fuck the music. But yeah,
the longevity of the band, absolutely. No, yeah. I know what you mean.
It does come down to, like, so many bands, and I've been in the situation so many times that everything seems good at first, because it is. It's so easy to, you know, write some tunes. Everything's going well. Everything's fresh. And, you know, but the second you hit the road and you start getting into the actual nitty-gritty and traveling and organisation and all that kind of stuff. And I know I've said that word organisation thousands of times already, but it's such a big part. Then the second you get into that kind of stuff and you realise the people that just are not equipped for it, they're the kind of people that you know so many. Like, I mean, most people here, if you're listening to this and you've been in a band or still playing in bands, you'll know, you could list at least 10 people right now that you know that have played in bands that are no longer. And there might be several reasons they're not, but I can guarantee that at least a couple of them are because they just can't get their shit together. And it's such a big thing.
It's pretty hard because, I mean, you know, I think the perfect scenario is that you'd have like four guys in a band and they're four equally minded people that are all motivated to the same degree with the same goal. And that's the sort of the perfection thought is the perfect scenario where people think, oh, well, we all want to be this sort of band that can play this particular level of, you know, festival or touring or whatever. But then all the steps in between to get to that common goal is usually all over the shop. And look, you've got certain people that are younger or older. You got people that are committed to relationships and kids and whatever. And then you've got people that are in particular types of jobs and whatever with different levels of commitment. So it's a really hard thing to sort of try and manage the different personalities and the different commitments that each person has. And for us, I mean, we don't have an equal playing field as far as the personalities and the different life scenarios that everyone's got. We're not all young people that, you know, we're not all 20-nothings that have got no assets, we've got no...
That's why there's so many bands that appear and so many of them are, you know, like 20.
Yeah.
So, because it's easy at that stage, but how many of those bands do you still see 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years later?
And that's it. And that's the big thing that people need to remember is that, you know, you may not have the same common goals as you would when you were all in your early 20s. You know, everyone's got different liabilities and different commitments in other areas of their life, whether it's mortgages or debts and families, whatever. They've got all these different things. But if you can manage to balance it, it's not an easy thing at all. You have to sort of make do with what you've got. But if people really want what they want and they want to get to a certain degree and their certain plateau from a musical point of view and also from a business point of view for their band, then they can make it happen. But you've got to really have that discussion within the four people in the band. And if people aren't on the same level, then that's when the bands don't exist anymore. And that's a big problem in Australia, is that you have these fantastic bands that release these debut EPs or albums and they do a number of shows and then realize, oh shit, we're not playing in front of several hundred people a night that we thought we would. We've got no money. Stuff this. I'm gonna quit the band and do my own thing, and you never hear the band again. And
I think we just don't have the climate for people to play in front of those kind of crowds. Like, every now and then you will, I mean if on the right bills, but ultimately for metal in Australia it does have to be taken overseas.
Yeah.
And people, I guess, don't push towards that. They expect it to go well here first. And, I mean, obviously, you want to go well here and you want to get your name for yourself, but overseas is where metal's bigger. Like, I mean, in almost every country, Europe especially, Asia, you know, even America to a certain extent. But, all our capital cities are so far apart. Tours here are a lot harder and you just got to do your best. But I think ultimately, if you want to be a band long term, you need to know that, you have realistic expectations, I think, is the best thing for anyone.
I think the realistic expectations are the main thing. And I think for people, they need to understand that there's levels of success, and from a local and international point of view, and from a local point of view, they need to keep their expectations low if they want to have longevity. But there are so many international opportunities. It's not just the case of approaching the Nuclear Blast or the Century Media or Metal Blade or the major labels or hitting up the major festivals and that's it. I mean, you got to remember every band under the sun globally is doing the same thing. And metal's getting popular, and even just Europe alone. I mean, Europe's fucking massive. And you know, we, from an example from our point of view, we might play something that we think's pretty high quality, but in Germany there might be a band that doesn't play the same sort of, or does play the same sort of music, but probably not as good as what we think we are. But from a label point of view, they may turn around and go, well, geez, they're local. We can make more money off these guys than these other guys that are down the arse end of the world in Australia that have to commit so much more money to tour. So, but, you know, it's a big thing. It's a big thing to try and get people involved and try and you know, commit to long term and have them tour. But, you know, they've got to have the right frame of mind, and they've got to think outside the box as well. I mean, there's a lot of outlet portals online that they can find people, and I think, you know, even from a social media point of view, I see a lot of bands that don't utilize social media as well as they should. They stick to Facebook and that's it. But there's a lot of other...
And that's one of the worst things you can do, is just sticking to Facebook. Yep. And so many bands are guilty of it, so many promoters especially. I think that's one of the worst. When you just see a promoter put the event on Facebook and that's, you know, apparently effective promotion. I mean, it's definitely a strong point of promotion, don't get me wrong, but I think the time of being outside gigs and handing out flyers, of getting posters out, of just doing everything you can to be out there, is definitely... Promotion should be effective. Sorry, I should rephrase. I think there's so much opportunity when it comes to promotion for a gig, and so many ways to be creative. And I think the promoters that are creative ultimately end up with the better turnouts, because it is a chance to be creative, a chance to have fun too. Like, I love standing outside gigs and giving out flyers, especially if it's after a gig that a band I'm in has played and it's for our next shows. So it gives you an opportunity to talk to the people that have just seen you. And on top of that, you actually, you know, get to chase after people that don't want to take one. And yeah, you know, it's always a bit of fun.
What you're saying about promo and doing different things differently, I mean, that's what you have with the Trollhog and stuff, you know, trying to...
Oh, definitely, yeah. Trollhog, yeah. And they're one of the bands that...
You're lucky with them because they've already got a novelty sort of...
So it makes promotion thing. We've done everything. We, for their album launch show last year, ended up, because they've got a very carnival-esque kind of theme to them. Last year, we turned the Ballface Stag in Sydney into a circus tent. Like, I got all this circus tent material, covered the walls in it so it felt like you're in a circus pavilion tent. We had little sideshows and games all up the walls. We had projectors. We even had a point where during their set, the whole top of the roof of the venue was rigged with this big net with a bunch of balloons, like hundreds of balloons in it. So at this one point in their set, we pulled it down and balloons landed all over the crowd. It was quite wild.
It's good. It's something different, you know.
Oh, definitely. And that's what you need. You do need to, like, obviously you can't do it for every single show because, you know.
You got to make it worthwhile at that time.
I think things like album launches and, yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, you got to think good stuff for that. And it doesn't have to be anything at the show necessarily. Like, even things like buy a pre-order ticket and get a CD or a gift or something. Just things like
that. There's so many small things bands could be doing. And
making people feel like they're getting value for money, I think, is the best thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because ultimately, even I've seen with gigs, the difference between charging $10 and $15 can be make or break for a gig. I mean, people can think, oh, wow, $5, I could buy another drink for that. I mean, even in most Sydney pubs, you couldn't. But, just things like that. I've seen that, you tell someone a gig, oh, it's $10, I'll be there. And then you tell them $15, oh, I'll see how it go. It can be such a big difference. So you really need to think of things that are going to get people thinking, hey, what's making me want to really go to this show? Obviously, ideally, in a perfect world, it would just be the bands, but a lot of the time, people don't think like that. They think, oh, I'll just catch them the next time when it's more convenient. It can even be the difference of having it Friday or Saturday night. Sometimes Friday, people will be after work. They're
absolutely
running, you know, they're tired. Unless it's something really worth their while, they're not going to head out.
I mean, we toyed with that for a few years where we tried to do, you know, we do not album launches, but on the tour of an album, we would do our Sydney show and, you know, all the pre-sale tickets through like Oztix or whatever it was, we'd get a free copy of the new album. And you know, we did a few freebie sort of things at the door and whatever, and it was good, but then we sort of got to a point where we're sort of thinking, what do you do next? Like, how do you top it each time? Like, what do you give away?
That's better than your actual album.
Yeah, and you don't want to cheapen what you've done before, so it's a really fine line. But I think what you and the guys from Trollhoggin did was quite good, because instead of telling people in advance, like, instead of giving them incentives to come along, I mean, you had that. You promoted, you had the information there, but you didn't give them so much physical incentives to come in. Like, you know, you didn't give them, well, not that I know of anyway, you didn't give them extra. You didn't give them extra.
Oh, no, that one we did. That was
what did you have on top?
If you bought a pre-sale,
yeah.
you got a show bag
yeah.
on entry, and that had gifts in it, that had tickets for the shows there, had a ticket for the free popcorn we had at the merch desk. You got a you got your value for money like that. Like,
I think okay.
Lolly bags.
I'll change my tactic then, because obviously that backfired.
Party poppers, streamers.
Did you go Hot Dollar and get all that?
Yeah. Hot Dollar is the best.
But you backed it up, not just with what you've told people and what they get at the door, but when they've come in, they've had a show.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's backed by the show. Yeah, it's not just like a novelty thing like where
they walk into that room and they've gone, holy shit, this is awesome. And it's not just like somebody on stage with a good setup. You know, from what I understand, they had a great room. The whole room was set up. And
but the climax was still the show.
It was an experience overall. And yeah.
The whole thing was an experience, but the show was still the pivotal point.
But you made an experience overall. So people who lead the show, who spent the money, would turn around and tell other people and say, I went and saw this band on Friday, Saturday night or whatever, and they were fantastic, right?
Well, that was
the all these things happened, you know, they had all these crazy things, like a Sideshow Alley sort of thing, had a show bag and blah, blah. And that in itself will get other people to turn around when they see that band name pop back up, they go, oh, fuck me, I'm going to go. I want to check it out.
No, for example, like, we had, I think it was about 110, 120 pre-sales alone, which is very, very rare for a local show.
Yeah.
Like, pre-sales usually only something that's reserved for international
bands. Yeah, absolutely.
But, so, you know, that obviously made an impact. But, it was really good fun.
That was very good. All right, so we've been crapping on for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm surprised if anyone's still listening.
Yeah, probably not. But I want to finish off this question because I asked another question.
I'm going to wonder, you know how like people always think if time travel exists?
Yeah.
This is the only way I'll ever know. If you're listening to this right now, myself and Andrew, or Andy, because I'm Andrew, are currently on our last beers and we would like another beer. So if time travel does exist and you want to get in our favour, come back right now and get us a beer. Watch the door. Time travel does not exist, Andrew Dowling.
I like it. I was a bit disappointed.
Yeah, I think I'd rather it exist and get a beer.
But I did like that.
Then again, if you discover time travel, are you actually going to waste your time bringing us two drongos a beer?
Yeah, true. But maybe if we were time traveling and we understood this, then we would be walking through that door.
We'd go have beers with our past selves.
Can you do that though? Can you walk through the door and give yourself a beer or no?
Yeah, because that'd be your future self. So it'd just be us with grey hair.
But then you'd be the same person.
Yeah, you can still party with yourself.
Can you? Can you come back?
Yeah.
Can you? I don't know.
Seen any time
travel movies? I haven't seen enough. I don't know. I haven't seen enough sci-fi.
Yeah, stop watching porn. Just because there's no time travel porn.
Time travel porn.
New genre.
Oh, you can make a lot of money.
Time travel porn where they go back and fuck their younger selves.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. That could be.
Could be on something.
Be careful. Be careful on that avenue. That could be. There could be some legalities.
Some kind of black hole. Black hole.
All right. No, hang on. Before we leave, because you haven't answered the other question I had before. What are the things that you've learned from both sides of your profession?
I didn't answer that one.
No, you didn't. You haven't learned. No, you even told me.
I haven't learned.
You haven't learned. You haven't learned at all. We are in case you haven't told.
Andy Dowling is getting kind of drunk. Can you hear the slurring of his...
But you haven't told me, though. You haven't said, what have you learnt from your teaching side of things that you've been able to implement into your music side of things, and then what from your music side of things...
I did, because it's the organisation.
But is that it?
Oh, yeah. No, learning from teaching to apply to musicians, dealing with childish egos. It's a big one.
It's a big one.
Yeah, and people that, you know, chuck hissy fits within a millisecond. That's a good one to learn. Actually, yeah, pretty much the backstage room of most bands, especially, you know, musicians, isn't that different to dealing with, like, a bunch of year three or year four kids.
That'd be a bit of patience, so I guess.
Both fields, you have to have patience.
Yeah.
If you don't have patience, being a musician or being a primary school teacher, if you don't have patience, you can't do it. Like, honestly, if you were a musician and you didn't have patience, even just touring would be the worst thing in the world because, you know, you got, what, 2% of your day you're playing on stage, the other 98% you're waiting and waiting for travel and waiting for food and waiting for sleep. You got to have patience. And Andrew Dowling just burped.
No, excuse me, you burped. Anyway, I've got nothing else to say. All right, cool. Well, that's, I don't know how long it'll be gone, but according to this, it's been an hour 20-something. But I don't know if that's the entire recording or when we lost the recording earlier, so...
Andy Dowling, thank you very much for having me.
Hey, my pleasure. I'll have you back on episode 600, trust me.
600, okay.
Yeah. As warned at the start of the episode, it does get a little bit slurry towards the end there. And yeah, the quality of content and discussion progressively gets worse and worse as we go. But yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I actually enjoyed, I always enjoyed chatting to Andrew, but hopefully you guys got something out of it and weren't too bored with it. I think... you know, depending on the person I speak to, some of these things could be only half an hour, they could be 15 minutes, they could be an hour, they could be 3 hours. It just comes down to the person, the time we've got available, and I guess how the actual conversation goes. If you want to find Andrew, you can find him via Facebook. Search for Rise of Avernus. And you can also search for Andrew Craig via Facebook as well. He has a million mutual friends to me. And if you're in Australia, chances are he knows everybody that you've ever met in your entire life. The guy is a bit of a social butterfly, so he shouldn't be too hard to track down. However, if you do have trouble locating him or his band or any of the other projects that he's mentioned, I'll have all links in the show notes. Please, if you do enjoy his music, go and buy their stuff. If you're in Australia, go and check him out on tour. I believe Rise of Avernus are just on tour now and are going to be playing shows for the next month or so, but there's a lot of things in the works for him as far as international touring goes, and I'm sure that a lot of you will have plenty of opportunities to bump into him along the way. If you want to support this podcast, I'm saying this in advance. I don't even know how this shit works, but I'd assume that by the time this is up and running, it will be on iTunes and just going by whatever everybody else says, please give it a rating and a good review and whatever else it takes for a podcast to be successful. Let other people know about it, although I probably wouldn't expect many people to be bragging too much about how amazing this podcast is just yet. But, you know, if you feel like you want to do a gesture of goodwill my way, that would be appreciated. I will have a separate Facebook page, which will be a little bit wanky, as opposed to my personal profile, which will be up shortly, and my website, which I just registered and should be up and running now, will be andysocial.net. Andysocial.net, one word, andysocial. That will have all information there. It'll have the show notes. It'll have links to all of our social media pages, including all the Lord stuff, which for anybody who already knows me well, you'll see how much I whore that stuff out on a daily basis. But that's all there in case you're not completely aware. And that's it. Another episode coming up shortly, another lengthy one. But I promise it's actually a really, really good one. And as opposed to the first one, no, it's a different change of pace as such, but it's a good one. I strongly recommend that everyone gives it a shot and lets me know what they think. Anyway, until next time, ta-ta. You're ready, you're ready, social. You're ready, you're ready, social.
We don't need more beer. We're definitely sure.
Yeah, we don't need any more beer. We haven't had plenty. We've still got a few left, so.